Okay, Shelly, you ready? Board?
Yep.
Okay. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, 12/11/12. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good. Okay, for those of you that may have picked up an agenda, we forgot to insert public comment number one. Oh, that's just on mine. Okay, great. So at this time, this will be an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board on a topic on today's agenda. We have one request that we'll just defer that one until the mental health or redesign discussion, but if there's anyone that wants to discuss any other topic on today's agenda or that one, this would be a good time. Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on to item three, consideration of minutes of 12/4/12.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Personnel action, item number four. Looks like mostly longevity adjustments and things of that nature. So,
in the time of year, move approval.
Second.
Been moved in second. If you're no further comments, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel action is approved. On the consent agenda, item number five, please add utility permit 1339 and 1340.
I'll move approval with noted changes.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. All right. No public hearing items. We move to additional items. The first additional items is consideration of Resolution 1340 to adopt the Story County, Iowa Deferred Compensation Plan for Public Employees Amended and Restated 457B, Government Plan Document. Alyssa Wignall, HR Director.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is just a few changes to our plan document. We amended it in February. I've had conversations with Nationwide. There were a few items that they wanted in the plan document. And now I finally got that information back. This includes a few changes. I had discussions with our legal counsel, Jessica, and then I sent it down to Susan Freed, who updated our plan document. She went through, added a few, and so this is just to get Nationwide. We need them to adopt our plan document. Just a few changes. I will send it to all three companies and have them sign off on it.
Is there anything of really any substance or significance as far as just more or less minor?
No. One of it was if an employee becomes reemployed, if they leave employment and come back, they enter the plan on the date they reenter employment. There were some non-spouse beneficiary rights. It's just a few minor things, nothing major.
I move approval of Resolution 1340.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1340. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Resolution 1340 is adopted. Thank you, Alyssa. Seemed like an awful lot of stuff here. Okay. Then moving on to the second item is a discussion and consideration of mental health and disability service regionalization. Both Deb Chilroth and Gayla Harkins, our CPC and Community Service, Community Life Director. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Regionalization is one of the more significant changes in mental health and disability services redesign. And Story County, over the course of about the last 9 months to a year, has been involved in discussions with some of the smaller counties that are contiguous to us, as well as discussions with Polk County. The meetings with the smaller counties, we've had two meetings that involve the CPCs and boards of supervisors members. We had one in June and then recently one in November. And the one in November, it was set forth kind of a rough timeline of where to go if those counties do regionalize and how soon we want to pursue that. And then we also took a look at some proposed recommendations in moving forward. And one of the things that these other counties are wanting to consider is moving into a region that would become effective July 1st of 2013. And those counties involve Franklin, Hardin, Hamilton, Boone, Madison, Storey, and Marshall. So there would be seven counties total.
So all contiguous but one.
That, with the exception of Madison, and let me add why they are in the mix. Boone and Madison have had a longstanding 28E agreement for case management and other kinds of disabilities administration services for about 17 years. Dallas County had been a part of that. Dallas sits right in between Boone and Madison, but then Dallas left that 28E agreement and went on their own. So Boone is hoping that the state will look favorably and allow Madison to be part of the region. It would help our population, overall population base, because those seven counties have a combined population of 216,062 people. So if there ever was a population threshold, there was early on when the legislation was being developed and then it was dropped. But if there ever was a population threshold, we would be over at the 200,000 mark with those seven counties.
I'm sure there were some discussions regarding this, but from your understanding, will Boone need to file, or Madison, both the two of them need to file for a exemption under the current rules because they're not contiguous?
It's my understanding that the exemption rules, which are still being developed, they've been pushed back now for consideration in January. But the exemption rules mainly apply to the number of counties for a region. So right now the legislation says three or more counties can comprise a region. So if there are two counties or one county that wants to be a region, then they would have to file for the exemption. And that's how the exemption is applied right now. I believe that Boone and Madison counties are looking at pursuing something legislatively for their particular situation. Okay. Some of the benefits of looking at starting the regionalization process earlier than what the bill is requiring. The bill requires that regions are in full implementation by July 1st of 2014. So by doing something earlier, that would give the counties at the table more time to at least a full fiscal year to look at all of the details that are outlined in redesign, the regional management plan, the consideration of the core services and how those will be provided throughout the region and funded, just all of those very important details. That need to be worked out, and if there's already a 28E agreement in place allowing those counties to coordinate and plan, then I think that would just make the transition a little bit smoother as we move forward. I think it would also stabilize locally our dollars and our services as we move forward into this new redesign. The other counties at the table can levy under the 4728 per capita that's being considered. There would be a total of $10.2 million. That would include Storey County levied in property taxes. And four counties would receive state funding under that proposal, and three counties would lose a little bit of money, but $10.2 million in total. Are any questions or comments at this point?
No, my question would again come back when you talk about the timeline. Again, there was just one statement on here that...
Okay. These other counties that we've been, the smaller counties we've been talking to, they have a similar social services structure as Story County in terms of their community services office, providing not only the MHDD and the CPC functions, but general assistance and case management. And there are two of the counties that do have their own county-operated services besides Story County. Hamilton County has a supported employment and DAHAB program, and Hardin County has a drop-in center. And then all of the counties, with the exception of Story County, are currently in a 28E agreement that is relatively new. It happened in the past year that they've created an intensive psych rehab service, and Hamilton County is currently the county, the employer of record for that particular service. So some similarities there. The other benefit would be all of the counties are in the same judicial district, the second judicial district. And as we move forward with redesign, one of the core services and extending into the core plus services is having judicial-involved services, so jail diversion, mental health courts, those kinds of things, and it does make it a little easier to plan and provide those services when we're having to work with one court administrator and one chief judge and then the district as a whole to be able to march those services out. So those are just, I think, some of the benefits of looking at these smaller counties and partnering with them. Polk County, in the discussions that we've had with them, as we know, they're the largest county in the state, and pairing up with them would give a total population of 520,182, total population. That's not clients, but total population. Levy under the 4728 proposal, Polk and Story would bring in about $25 million under that levy. Both Polk and Story would get some state dollars on top of what we currently levy. Polk County has a different structure to how they're providing services and overseeing the mental health and disability services system. Their Polk County Health Services is a nonprofit that was formed in the mid-70s, and not only do they handle mental health and disability services, but they also have a hand in some other just general health kinds of services and have some tie into Broadlawn's Medical Center there in Des Moines. An exemption would need to be filed if Polk and Story counties were to move forward, because it would be under that three-county limit. Polk County has talked to a filing exemption themselves anyway if they are just a single county region, and have been looking into the viability of that and the support that they could receive from the legislature in pursuing that. So they've been looking at an either-or situation as well. The exemption rules, as I mentioned, have not been noticed yet. They are still being developed. And in an exemption that's filed, the Department of Human Services has the final say. And if it's not favorable to the county or counties who are filing the exemption, there is an appeal process that would be followed through with an administrative law judge. So it could be a little bit of a long and drawn-out process depending on whether or not an appeal is filed. To meet the letter of the law, letters of intent are due to the Department of Human Services by proposed regions by April 1st of 2013. So that's right around the corner. That would be the first deadline that we would be required to make. And then thereafter, regions have to be formed by December of 2013, ready for full implementation July 1st of 2014. The timelines that the group that met in November took a look at was sharing the information with the boards of supervisors on the proposed recommendations and then working on developing a 28E agreement between December and February, so we can have that in place and ready to go. And then by March, we would have had two supervisor and CPC meetings looking at the draft letter of intent and the 20E agreement, and then by March 25th, sending in the letter of intent from the proposed region. And then in May and June, each county would designate a supervisor or designee to the governing board. That's one of the other pieces, is there will be a regional governing board for each region. And we would hold another supervisors. Well, the 2080 agreement would be approved by all member counties by June 1st. There would be another joint meeting between CPCs and supervisors. And then in late June, early July, there would be an organizational meeting for the 2080 governing board so that the region can begin sometime then in July. Question?
First question back to the timeline in the second bullet point on November 19th and the 30th. Through that time period when we met with Board of Supervisors and CPCs of the seven counties in Marshalltown, the discussions did center around kind of a layout of proposed policies and procedures, and I think it's fair to say that that group was in support of the information that was brought forth. However, no formal action has been taken by any boards of supervisors to date on exactly what that will look like. Are you contemplating the group working together and reviewing what they had proposed and maybe setting a date and time by which each member county boards of supervisors could vote to approve? Because if you notice the statement, it says approval, and so while I interpret that as the approval from the group that met that day to move forward, but I would assume that the supervisors of the regional board or however if we move forward, but we would more or less have to approve that before we actually submit the letter of intent. Is that correct?
And what happened at the November meeting in Marshalltown, there was no formal vote taken because that couldn't happen because there wasn't a majority. Yes, exactly. So it was just agreed that the draft looked good, but then each member county needed to go back to their respective boards to talk about the timeline, to talk about the proposed recommendations, and then look at moving forward from there. So there was no formal vote taken at the November meeting. It was just reviewed, and there was a consensus that, okay, let's take this then to the next step, and in each member county having to review the information.
For the purpose of both Rick and Paul, since I was at that meeting, and for the purpose of, since this is aired publicly, would you just maybe comment on your initial response or reaction to that particular meeting in terms of the relationships and the discussions that was generated? I know I came away with a real positive feeling from the way I saw how things were going, but from your perspective, would you maybe just share initially what your thoughts may have been?
Overall, very positive. These are counties that have worked together in various other kinds of relationships. I think the Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Board was one relationship that was brought up. The Second Judicial District, those counties use the services that are here in Story County. Many of them use Mary Greeley Medical Center for their inpatient psychiatric services because it's centrally located. And so the boards of supervisors there seem to be very interested in moving forward and wanting this kind of a collaboration and partnership. Otherwise, they're going to have to probably be looking at other alternatives themselves, because for those counties to form without Story County's involvement is...
Oh.
Exactly. I think that is concerning to them.
If I could, Wayne, I feel where we're headed here, and I'm on board, but can we just take a step back and kind of go through why it appears that this group of seven, as I like to call them, is the right choice for us? As I see it, Story County entered this process with three options. We could have filed a waiver and tried to be a standalone. We qualify in every way except for population and the fact that we wouldn't be three counties together. We could go with Polk, which would get us over the threshold of population, but it doesn't take care of the three. Or we could form with other interested counties, which as we looked at it, these are the interested counties. So take me through real quick why I'm hearing your recommendation coming forward. Why does it not make sense for Story County to try to be a standalone?
I think over the long haul, the direction that the state's going, the intent of the redesign is to gain some economy of scale and being able to pool these resources together is the overarching premise to this. And so if we didn't, say we were granted an exemption and could and stand on our loan alone, I think at some point in time in the very near future that would change anyway and we would be required to go in to a region. And at that point, then we would be coming in behind as opposed to at the point of designing what it is that we're wanting to create and collaborate. We'd be coming into something that would already be created. We'd also have the challenge of not having our resources already combined or, you know, the benefit of being able to pool our resources because we would truly be just standalone in every way. So from a growth standpoint and developing the services and things that would be required for that region, it makes sense for us to be a part of that too. And those other counties that we have talked to, the smaller counties, they already utilize our resources. We already have some natural relationships going on. And so to exclude ourselves from that really doesn't make sense at this point to do that. This is the direction that it's going to go. And so...
Okay, so once you got past, okay, standalone doesn't make sense for those reasons, then we had options of these other six counties and Polk County. Just talk me through one more time why these other six, I mean, I think I get it. The other six don't qualify without us, and mm-hmm. they look more like us, and I get it. But talk me through one more time why the six instead of Polk.
Deb kind of hit on a good deal of that, but the six counties that have been connected to us, we've already had long-standing business sorts of relationships with them, and we do with Polk as well. But there had been, as soon as this began to be discussed, those counties were talking with us, and they initiated conversation with us on this makes sense, and there have been more meetings. I think Deb, CPC-wise, you met with those folks there. We've been contacted as a provider to go into those counties previous to this to try, you know, with this understanding that perhaps there was going to be regions to be invited to go and do more work in those areas. We use the same computer system. Polk has a different tracking system that meets their needs because they are so large and diverse and do different things. I think that they're just in similar size and philosophies that we have more in common with what we pay for, what we have tried to build the system to respond to. Very similar to the other counties, the six that we were talking to. We have quite a bit of overlap again with Polk County, but they do certainly some things differently than we have.
So as you got in and you analyzed these three options, at the end of the day, you come forward to us with a recommendation. Is it even close in your mind? What's the right fit for Story County? What is the right thing for Story County to do as we move ahead with restructuring statewide?
I think the right fit would be with those six counties. We've been, as Gayla indicated, we've worked with them for a number of years, and we've technically been in a region with those counties since the passing of Senate File 69 when the whole CPC process was developed. There were CPC regions. There were five regions. And we've always been at meetings and at the table and those kinds of things with those smaller counties. So that's, I think, where the similarities had developed over the years. And that's, you know, that's not to say that there are major differences that we have with Polk County. And regardless of what, you know, what we end up doing or what any region ends up doing, the regions are going to have to work together, just like the counties have had to work together. So there still will be, you know, the working relationships with Polk County just on a more regional basis. And at this point in time, from the indications that I've seen in the different maps that have floated around in the past year, there looks like there's roughly about 15 regions that will be forming. But some of those almost change on a daily basis, so we really won't know for a number of months yet.
Possible that if we decide to go with these six other counties that and form that region, that that's something that Polk County would be interested in?
Oh, possibly, sure. Polk County and maybe some of the other counties that are looking at other regions. I mean, this isn't over till it's over, I guess I want to say, because once the letters of intent are received by the Department of Human Services, the department has the final say as to whether or not a region is viable, meets the economies of scale, that sort of thing, to move forward. And if there are counties that have formed, you know, four or five that don't meet that test, they certainly could be lumped into another region, and that region that was, you know, three counties could end up being eight counties. I mean, there's still that to be shook out. But, you know, Polk could land with any other region that's forming around them if that's what DHS, you know, thinks should happen. But again, Polk has that, if they're filing an exemption, they have that ability to appeal and have a second look taken.
I also think that it would be logical if you can apply logic to any of this. So there's the caveat for that. It would seem to me to be logical that Polk would most likely go, if not allowed to be on their own, go in a different direction, because we do have the benefit of the resource of the psychiatric beds, and they do too. And that's one of the cornerstones of being able to regionalize. And not that you can't use, and that we won't use hospitals in other areas, and they won't use Mary Greeley from other regions, for sure. But that was it. It really doesn't seem logical to duplicate some of those very rare resources in one region, that being the psychiatric hospital bed availability. So, just guessing. But again, that's just a guess.
How do you see? I mean, is there supposed to be a regional services director? I mean, Deb, like your position here in Story County is a CPC.
I mean, I think we're going to get to that here in just a minute, right? When we start going through the policy recommendations.
Okay.
Paul, what I was trying to get us to do is I was trying to get us to go ahead and narrow it down and say, okay, comfortable or not comfortable with whatever this grouping is, and then really get into talking about the nuts and bolts on both the timeline and the policy recommendations, because I know I appreciate both documents, but I have some concerns in both documents that I think we should talk about once we get to, okay, we understand why we're not a standalone, we understand why Polk is not the partner that makes the most sense for us, and so move ahead. So that's what I was trying to get us to. I'm ready to say I am... Of our options, if you accept that those are our three options, I am most comfortable with the idea of this group of seven trying to form a region and moving ahead. That's where I stand based on everything I've read and heard.
We need that in the form of a motion and a vote.
Well, at this time, I'm not real sure if we need any formal action, but we do need to, before this or at the conclusion of this meeting today, if we decide, and yes, in a way we do, because if we decide that Polk is not going to be one that we want to move forward with, they need to know so they can begin to plan accordingly and move forward with the exemption of the standalone or reaching out to any other county there. In the last meeting that we had at ISAC, Polk County Supervisor Angela Connolly was in attendance with the Director Palmer and the ISAC staff, and we talked around about the exemption rules and the different types of things. And one of the questions did come up at that time by Supervisor Connolly was, is what would be the process if you could only come up with two counties? And they were informed by director at that time they would still have to file an exemption request just like any other county who wanted to do a standalone. And so she basically kind of looked at me as to say, well, then we would have to work on a letter. And I just assured her that no decision had been made. We had not met with the other counties as yet. We're still exploring options to determine what the direction would be. But right now, the important thing was understanding what the process would be is for the exemption aspect of that. So I do think it would be in our best interest if we felt that we want to continue to work more closely with these seven counties that's listed here, that we notify Polk of our intent and then let them begin to do whatever they think is necessary. I just feel that that would be a courtesy. If I was in their shoes and they had reached out to us like they did to have that initial meeting, I think what they're waiting for is some signal from us as to whether they continue to plan ahead or thinking that we might need more time, or if we don't feel like we need more time, you know, just go across.
But and for me, I believe Polk is truly a standalone. I mean, they've got the population, they've got everything they need. I believe they make more sense as standalone. They don't. Their structure and ours is not real conducive right now. The other six that we're talking to, we do at least have structures that overlap in a lot of areas. We do have a lot more existing relationships with these others than we've had with Polk and the way they've done things. And so I believe in the best interest of everybody, it makes the most sense for us to move ahead with exploring trying to form a region with the other six counties. And so I'll make that motion.
Okay, it's been moved and second that we continue to explore the regionalization process with the six other counties as mentioned. Further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
So now I'd like to talk about policy recommendations.
So that gives you some direction as far as discussion with the other CPCs and so forth, okay? All right.
I have one item that I'd like us to discuss adding to the timeline, and I have several areas that I'd like to discuss on policy recommendations. So you guys pick where you want to talk first.
Let's do the timeline.
Timeline, okay. I'd like to see one thing added. I'd like to see the region apply to DHS to fund consulting services to help us form the policy operating policies and procedures for the region. I know that Chuck Palmer, in talking to us down at ISAC, mentioned that that was something they would be receptive to funding. And I just think we need to work it in somewhere on the timeline. And we need to have a third party with outstanding understanding of this region and the way we do things, helping us get to the table and come together so that we can get past some of the protectionism that's going to be really, really natural as we look at forming this thing.
Okay. Very good.
You guys have anything else on the timeline? Or
no, but I do think that's an excellent point. And, yes, one of the questions that came up was some of the counties that were attempting to form that may not meet all of the necessary qualifications as to whether there would be technical assistance out there. And they did indicate that that was there. So I think it would only behoove us to try to get as much input, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to make the overall decisions in terms of evaluating whether or not we meet the standards that are out there. So I think that's an excellent request.
Yep. Thank you. Regional policy, I'll just start at the top and go through. Access, each county will retain a full-time office. I think that's exactly the way to start, but I don't think we want anything that binds us to that being what the region has long-term. The region needs to have flexibility to act over the long haul. I hope that we're going into this thinking that it's going to be more than a 10-year experiment by the state. Maybe that's what it's going to be, but we should plan as if it's going to be longer than that. And the reality is there may come a time that each county does not need to have an office. I don't think that's where we're starting, and I buy into starting with every county having an office. But I want to make sure that whatever we put together does not tie the region that absolutely under all circumstances each county will have an office for all time.
And I just want to make a comment to that, Rick. At the meeting in Marshalltown where we talked about that, there are several items on this list that is the very thing is at least to start off with. And as we gain some expertise and gain some technical assistance and get better at providing services and funding services as a region, things on here can change. Now, the legislation does call for there to be a local access point in each county in each region.
Sure.
But it doesn't specify that it has to be a full-time office, part-time office, that kind of thing. But
would it address your concerns, Rick, if perhaps it was proposed that initial regional policy recommendations...
That helps me a lot.
That would be that there in the title?
Absolutely. That actually helps with several of the issues
okay.
that I'm going to bring up. Current space and cost responsibilities, that's fine with me. Each county is going to have their facilities that they should remain responsible for. Governance, I like the 28E board made up of one supervisor. From each county. I like that it's one vote per county. You know, so I think some people would selfishly want to do it by population so that we would get more of a vote. I think the right way to partner is one vote per county. I don't like this executive council made up of each of the community services directors. I get it. I get what's happening here. But if you've got a board that makes the decisions and then another board that tells them what the decision, I don't buy that you're ever going to get anything done. So I'd like to see that discussed more as an advisory council. I think that's our expertise on the ground. They should be providing all the advice. But the item that's missing in here that Paul mentioned before is there has to be a regional administrator. I don't buy that you can pull something like this together and not have one singular point of authority that reports to the decision-making board. And I can't find a way that I'm going to be able to back off that position because I don't think we can be successful doing that. And like I say, I understand what's going on here. I understand that there's lots and lots of trepidation from all people involved, but if we're going to go down this road, we've got to have some trust in each other. And part of that deal is setting up a region that can actually succeed. And part of being successful is having one responsible person to that ultimate board decision maker. So I think that's the big one that I've got that I didn't see in here.
Yeah, considerable discussion did center around this at the table. I brought up the issue as far as the role of the executive council as being proposed here, and I concurred with you that. They cannot be thought of as an executive council. They have to be more of in an advisory capacity because all decisions will rest with the governing board, etc. I believe, however, they were looking at this as a region is, again, coming back to this concept of each region will have the ability to kind of determine how it wants to structure and move forward and present recommendations to DHS that will ultimately say yay or nay. And if it looked like that they would have some level of confidence in having a advisory type layer of administration, this would be okay, but they did not really dig into the regional administrator at this point, would you say, Deb? I think it just somehow...
Aren't the rules calling for a regional administrator in each region?
There's a lot of interpretation with how the bill is currently written in terms of administration. Some people are reading it as being concrete, and yes, there has to be a single administrator, and then there are individuals under that person. There's the regional board, the administrator, and then individuals under the regional administrator doing the different functions that need to be carried out for the region. There are a couple other regions who are looking at that executive council kind of structure. And Department of Human Services and legislators are aware of that. I think we're going to see this get fleshed out a little bit more during the next session and getting more clearer on what the intent
is. Okay, so that's one point, is that the intent, we'll find out. The other one is the reality of operation. I mean, we don't run either of your departments by committee. You guys are responsible for each one of your departments. You're responsible to us, and we move ahead. And I don't buy that especially when we're pulling together seven different counties, I don't buy that ultimately we can all get on the same page if we say, okay, Story, you do your thing, and Hardin, you do your thing. But, oh, we're one region. And so, like I say, Wayne, this is just an area that I'm going to have real trouble on us getting into if there's not some recognition.
I think it is proper for us to point out that this is an area that we need more definition of, and if we are comfortable with some capacity of advisory, acting in an advisory capacity, I think we need to clearly send that signal that is the preferred, because I do agree with you that the whole concept initially, when you talk about the roles and duties and responsibilities, which is yet to be fleshed out, tends to designate a more authoritarian position. And from my perspective, and I think that is different, you know, and I brought up the fact that just like on juvenile detention, HERDA, agent resources, all of them, we have an executive board which is made up usually of the chair, the vice chair, and usually your treasurer. They can act in lieu of the full board in bringing forth recommendations that ultimately would have to be voted on, and this group would not have that authority, and I think it needs to be clear in what the intent would be.
I'm hung up on the managing day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
I don't buy that we can manage day-to-day activities of the region, having Deb and all her counterparts all on equal footing trying to make those decisions. I think you're creating a system that's going to fail. You're creating a system that there's going to be more conflict than there needs to be. And so ultimately, day-to-day management of a region, I believe, rests with a regional administrator. However that position is selected, I think it's important that there be the point of the spear.
You know, you make a good point there, and I'm not quite sure, Deb, whether you or Gaylor have thought much about that. But think about, again, how we operate and how each of the counties basically operate. So even under this scenario, do you see the idea of the day-to-day operations, how do you interpret that in terms of pulling together as an advisory group or a regional board? I mean, there's got to be standards that everybody's got to follow within the region. You know, otherwise it's not going to work.
Well, that sort of gets into the next one on the whole personnel policies and procedures. I can see some benefit of having some kind of an advisory council in the interim as we're trying to get up and running as a region, and then during that time finding out more clarification or what the intent of the legislation truly is in terms of a regional administrator. There's been a transition committee that's been meeting late last summer through, I think, October, November, and they have a report that they're getting ready to provide to the governor and the legislature, and they've mapped out an actual job description of the education qualifications and the work experience qualifications of a regional administrator. So you've got that going on out there, and yet the interpretation of how the legislation is currently written. So I think there's going to have to be a meeting of the two in order to march this forward. So, you know, as Gayla had said, you know, these are initial kinds of recommendations, and point well taken, Rick, and I will take that back to my colleagues, and that we are going to need more conversation and discussion on the governance part.
I think that's how I would see more of an advisory capacity for that council, because I know as supervisors we like to think we know everything, but in reality we know a lot less than we think we do. So in order for that to function at all, they're going to have to be some sort of an advisory capacity for that council. And the other thing that I would caution, and this probably comes from 30 years of county employment, but it's going to be very difficult to put one regional director in place to try to dictate to six other counties or seven other counties how they're going to, how that operation is going to run. That's something that's going to take a lot of hammering to get figured out. So
I don't disagree. What I'm seeing here is something that's put together that meets the baseline requirements of what the state has put forward, but it's really going to be seven counties continuing to operate like they operate. You think about it, okay, if we were to go with what's proposed here, you got the executive council made up of Deb and her counterparts. The reality is each one of those individuals are going to be most likely to live and let live. Let the other community service director do what they do in their county, and they're going to let me do what I do in my county. And that's fine, but that's not a true region. I mean, if you're getting into a true region, we're going to start to make some harder decisions down the road.
Well, the reality of the regions with the core services and all those different types of things is dictating that the counties can't operate the way they have in the past. They're going to have to kind of come together to table and decide the level of service and where clients are going to be access these services and how all of those things are being done. Because the one thing we heard at the mental health meeting last week was the state is so hung up on this concept of equity and trying to make sure that across the state, no matter where you live, people will have access to similar services, knowing full well that certain areas, that means they're going to have to travel to those particular specialty areas to get some of those services, but it will be more regionally defined and the services will be made available, and that will be part of the region's responsibility as well as the individual counties. So I think we're looking at it from the standpoint of when you start something up from scratch and there's so many unknowns, there's some growing pains, and it takes time for you to flush all of these things out. I think what you're doing and what hopefully the supervisors are going to do in each county when we come to the table is to really flush out exactly that level of understanding so that we can get this thing off on the right footing. Because I think Deb hit it on the head. There's a transition period. Even this region has got to be a transition period. Things may change over the course of the next year to 2 years as we move forward in this process. Hopefully DHS is going to be flexible enough to recognize that. But I agree with both you and Paul that we part of our role should be to try to anticipate what are the potential stumbling blocks that could cause regions not to operate effectively, and let's get those out on the table and have that open discussion from the start rather than say, oh, by the way, we've thought about this, but we didn't really want to mention it, and now it's here before us. So.
Yeah, well, the time to have the conversation, absolutely right, Wayne, is as we form this thing.
The biggest stumbling block will be counties going into the region with the thought that we're only doing this because the state told us we had to do it.
Right.
And we're going to join this region, but by God, we're still going to do things.
Do what we want to do. That's right.
Well, and I want to...
There'll be a lot of that.
Yes and no. In discussions that I've had with my colleagues from these six counties, they realize business has to change. And with regionalization, there's the anticipation that there will be efficiencies created. There should be. And how that's all going to shake out is why we want the next fiscal year's time to figure that out. If you go, an example of that is if you look at these recommendations, and on the back page where it talks about the pooling of funds, however that's going to be virtual or physical pooling, but then that the region's probably going to have a county act as the fiscal agent. So instead of having claims being processed in seven different counties for all different sets of services, having it in one county, and that's just one example of an efficiency that's going to have to be created. And then you're going to have someone who's going to be responsible for looking at rates and negotiating rates in the contracts. And another function would be service utilization and funding requests and maintaining what's going into the CSN system. So I do think the individuals at the table realize business is going to have to change. And to say that on paper it looks like nothing's going to change, I think it's going to have to evolve. And people do realize that. Now, I know there is a region that is looking at forming that wants to make it look like on paper they're a region, right, but they want to continue doing the things same as usual. And we know that's not going to work. So I think this is really more of an evolution as we move ahead, and the regional board is created and starting to give that direction. The consulting or technical assistance that we get will be very important as well.
Yep. And then fiscal agent is the only other comment I had. Seems to me that Story County is far and away the largest budget of these seven counties. I believe we have the most staff who handle things related to budget and claims. We're going to be, our $3 million of local property tax dollars is going to far and away be the greatest contributor to the region. The $1.2 million that the state says they're going to contribute every year, and underline they say they are going to contribute that every year, is going to be the largest. And so if there is a county that needs to act as the fiscal agent, with all apologies to Lisa, I believe it needs to be us. Yep. I'm not overly sorry. It is what it is.
Well, you raise a good point, and the discussion was around this concept of the fiscal agent, and one of the thoughts was proposed is so that no county felt like that it was a permanent position, to look at it on a 3-year rotation, which means that maybe at the end of the 3 years, if another county wanted to step up and take over that role, or if, say, you wanted that to happen, the governing board could consider doing that. That wouldn't necessarily mean that they would be mandated that they could only serve 3 years. Right. But the idea would be a 3-year time period, because I think there is going to need to be some adjustments with understanding the system. But I thought that was something that they did recognize, too, that the fiscal agent, the county that would serve in that capacity, they didn't want to kind of mandate it that whoever started out was going to have to serve in that capacity throughout the duration of the region.
Well, yeah, I think once the region is formed, then the regional board is the one that's ultimately going to make the decisions. I think the opportunity for the three of us to have major input is at the beginning of this thing. Then it's going to end up being one of us who's serving on that board. Those were the items I had.
Those were excellent. Anything else, Paul? Any other thoughts at this point? Deb, Gail, any other questions at this time from either of you? Okay, at this time I would ask Christy Krause from Mary Greeley Medical Center. She is here. We appreciate you being here. You can either make a statement or critique this whole process, whatever you'd like. Please come up and have a seat.
As Wayne said, I am Christy Krause. I'm the Director of Behavioral Health Services at Mary Greeley Medical Center. And my comments this morning do represent Mary Greeley Medical Center. I'm pleased to hear your motion. That's my primary reason for being here today, was to endorse a region on behalf of Mary Greeley Medical Center that included our primary service area, which is Story, Boone, Hamilton, Hardin, and Marshall counties. And I don't need to belabor all the comments that have already been made this morning, but we have spent a lot of work and time in this region already, developing relationships with mental health and substance abuse providers, judicial representatives, law enforcement officials, as well as other human service agencies. So we really support the continued work in that region. The other thing I was pleased to hear is that you recognize that it's not likely that the Department of Human Services is going to support a region that doesn't take into careful consideration the location of the limited number of state's inpatient beds. For example, if this region, if Story, was to form a region with Polk County, you would have almost 30% of the inpatient beds in one region.
not likely, and that's excluding the state's MHI beds, but it's not likely that DHS would support that kind of a region. The other thing is the importance of aligning with the second judicial district. We have mentored those relationships a great deal and would like to see that continue. And I guess with respect to some of the latter discussion you had about, you know, the regional board, the formation of that, I think it's important to keep the long-term vision in mind. And it is going to be difficult. It's going to be tough to bring these counties together into a working relationship. But the plan is to develop these regions whereby you can develop a continuum of mental health services for a defined population. And I would tell you that's been lacking. That is sorely the biggest problem with our system currently in the state of Iowa. And we're relying heavily on the emergency room and inpatient beds, the highest cost level of care. It's critical that we develop this continuum of services and move people through this continuum and rely more on the lower cost community-based care rather than the highest cost level of services. So I thank you for this time to allow me to give these comments and hope that you continue to use those as you move forward in making these decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Is there anyone else that wanted to, in the audience, that wanted to comment regarding what you heard this morning or the future direction that Story County may want to take as we move forward with the regionalization? Please come forward and state your name and for the record, please.
Sure. I'm Bill Vaughn. I'm with Mainstream Living. I'd like to thank you for your consideration of all the different options and your review of those. I would agree, too, that Story County is probably best served with the individuals you've selected. I think I would ask that you look at Polk County Health Services as maybe a model for how you set up your region. You know, they use a not-for-profit entity. You could have Board of Supervisors be the board for that not-for-profit. I think then the employees would all be on the same personnel policies, which I think is going to be an issue for us in the role in the future. There's a single policy manual from the Polk County Health Services that I think ultimately the region's going to have that single policy manual, and that's a good kind of process for doing that. I would encourage you also to include people with disabilities on your board. Polk County Health Services does that. I think it's a good move. I think that they have one advantage, that they're local. You know, it is all in Polk County, and they can do that with about 10 people. That's not going to be possible here. I would say that you're going to need to have the existing entities to at least be those points of contact in the counties that we serve, and I think that's something that I would really encourage you to take a look at that as well. But they're doing some things that are creative and that are different. I work with Polk County as well, so I spend a lot of time working with Polk County. They do some good things, and they do good follow-up of procedures, and I would encourage you really to download and look at their policy manual as maybe a starting point, and I certainly wouldn't ask that you do everything that they do, because I think there's a little bit of overkill there, but I think that that's probably a good model to at least start with. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Great. Anyone else? Okay. So, Board, based on what we've heard today, do we, and Jessica, I'm going to ask you, it wasn't listed here as a action item per se, but earlier I said that we need to maybe let Polk County understand that our intent at this point is to continue to collaborate with the other six counties, in the formation of this region. We could probably do that in terms of just a general understanding, or maybe put it on next week's agenda for formal action. I'm just wondering, from legal counsel, how you propose we ought to handle this as an action that we ought to take today.
Sir, I think since it's listed as a public hearing item, we should conclude the public hearing and put it for action on next week's agenda. If you want to take
No, it's not. It's under additional items. It's not a public hearing. I'm sorry.
Didn't we, as we started...
Oh, it is. It's under additional items.
It's consideration.
Sorry.
But didn't we handle that early on when we said we made the motion to move ahead and further exploring forming the region with the other six counties, which
right.
excludes
right.
Polk.
Yeah. My question is the formulation of the letter of our intent.
Are you
that
ready?
Have to be done in a different format? Because as Deb could maybe convey this through her work with the CPCs, but as I communicate with the supervisors from Polk County and so forth, I'm thinking, do we need to perhaps have something more formal?
Well, I apologize because I thought this was listed under a public hearing item. So since it's under an additional item, you can take formal action via motion at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
And we did.
We think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so that
I think
was
based on
question.
That. Can you read back to us what we passed? Yeah.
And then to move ahead with the 28E agreements and the intent.
And then we went on to talk about kind of some of the things that we would like to see in that agreement and what the policies would look like. And so, Wayne, I think based on the action that we've already taken, you're empowered to let Polk County know that we've decided to move ahead with the other six counties. And Deb, I think you're empowered as well based on that action.
Lynn Farrell, the Polk County CPC, knew that we would be talking about this, and so and he and I agreed to touch base later this week.
Great.
So I will certainly follow up with him, and then Wayne, if there's something you want to do in addition to following up with the Polk County Board of Supervisors, I can assist with that as well.
Right. Well, I can double check with them to see if they would like to have some formal statement from us. But initially, it was a discussion when we
right.
first met,
right.
and we were just kind of brainstorming to see where we were at. And so, if they don't need that, then that's fine. But if they did need something formalized, we'd certainly supply that.
And I think, you know, as we move forward, and if in Polk County filing an exemption, there are some things stated in the proposed exemption rules in terms of. The surrounding counties submitting some kind of a letter, you know, saying that Polk County going on its own is not going to cause us any issue, we're supportive of it, that kind of thing. But that's all has to be fleshed out in the exemption rules and
right.
is a little bit later on down the road.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, great. Appreciate it. Okay, then moving on to item number 3, consideration of purchasing a 2010 Dodge Caravan from Deary Brothers of Ames for $16,000 with trade-in. Supervisor Toot was handling this one.
This is why I like county government, because we've gone from talking about something that's got as much impact as anything, and now we're talking about needing a new van. So. But the fact is we need a new van. We've got a 2009 Windstar. That is the county's 1999 Ford Windstar, and that's the county's only actual pool vehicle that we use. And it gets quite a bit of use, doesn't have a lot of miles on it, but I think that's part of the problem is it spends most of its time sitting in the parking lot across the street. Currently, the driver's side window does not operate, and that's about a $600 fix. And after the election, we were informed that it's leaking what's most likely power steering fluid. So I'm not in favor of spending any more money on it. I've had a conversation with the Deary Brothers in Ames. They've got a used 2010 Caravan with just over 26,000 miles on it. They're willing to take our Windstar in and trade to the tune of about $2,000, which would leave us with $16,000 difference for this van. So my recommendation is that we approve the purchase.
Well, I know we've been spending money left and right trying to keep that Windstar running, and like you hit on, you know, it is interesting to go from a conversation that has this much long-term meaning as the mental health redesign to talking about a van, but I'll second your motion.
It's been Moved and second that we move forward with the purchase of the 2010 Dodge Caravan, $16,000 with trade from Deary Brothers. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Moving on down, agency report, non-departmental report. Darren, take your time as you come up. I'm going to be ready to go in
just a minute. Darren, what's going on?
Thank you, Darren. Okay. We have County Engineer Darren Moon for his departmental report.
Okay, good morning.
Morning.
We had two items on the consent agenda. One was the final plans for E18 resurfacing. That's from McCallsburg over to Ziering using federal aid funds, and that'll happen next construction season. The other item was a right-of-way contract on 180th Street Culvert, which is north of Ames, a box culvert we're doing. And that's the last bit of right-of-way for four different box culverts we're putting together right now for letting. And we're looking at February 12th local letting for those four structures. I'm going to go into the budget discussion a little bit because it's tied to those four culverts a little bit. Our FY14 budget submittal was due last Friday. We turned it in, and the total amount that we submitted in our budget asking was approximately the same as last year, give or take $10,000, I think it was. But what I wanted to point out is something a little bit unusual. We haven't done this for a few years. $210,000 included in that is actually carryover money from this past year because of the local construction, the way it works. Two of those culverts we're going to have to carry over to next year because I don't think they're going to be able to get all four done before the middle of June. So we have to carry it over, so we're actually showing it in two budgets. So essentially, we reduced our budget by over $200,000 from last year. Why did we do that? As you know, it's not due to a lack of need with secondary roads, but we're currently budgeting somewhere between $400,000 to $500,000 more in expenses than we get in revenue, so we're very quickly bringing down our carryover balance, and I'm trying to make that a gradual hit and not just in one year say you got to cut $500,000. That would be difficult. I'm trying to do it a little bit more gradual. With that being said, the good news is that the road use tax revenues are projected to be up next year about $140,000 for Story County, and that's mostly due to the Time 21 legislation. This is still not nearly enough to maintain our current level of service, and so the fuel tax increase discussion continues on, and it'll be discussed again at this legislative session. And a little bit of unfortunate news is now that the governor's tying that to the property tax reform, so if that doesn't happen, there's probably not much chance of road use or fuel tax increase, but we'll see. Things can change. Have been discussing the MAP 21, the federal funding program reorganization. Again, little has changed in the funding levels that are coming into the county. Just the funding streams that they come in, it'll change a little bit. The only exception to that is the transportation alternatives, they call it now, which is the enhancement funds, bike trails, and some other programs are combined, and they could see a reduced level of funding from past. But the second part of that discussion is the transfer of federal aid fund swap of the DOT, where they'd give us local dollars in return for our federal aid funds. We've been working on something like that for a number of years. As Wayne, you asked last month if this took legislative action, and it does. So, and the further along we get, there's going to be some difficulties with that this year, it looks like. And most of that revolves around when we let a federal aid project, you have to follow Davis-Bacon wages. And we actually get payrolls from the contractors every week and have to make sure they're paying them these Davis-Bacon wages. And there's some legislators that have issue with that. When we use local funds instead, those Davis-Bacon wages might not be distributed throughout the state as much. I don't know if it's a reality, but that's their concern. So that may hold that whole discussion up. A little update on the country club bike lanes. We're still working on plan development on that project and working with the DOT. There's some new ADA requirements we're trying to hammer out with them. But just wanted to make you aware the City of Nevada did ask that we include a roadway portion in our plans. I have some real reservations with doing that. As you remember, last year we paved our mainline portion of Country Club all the way down to the Country Club down there. And at that time I did offer to have the city include their portion in our plans. But since we have federal aid tied to this project, what that essentially does is make their project a federal aid project too, that the county essentially would be responsible for. I'm a little uncomfortable with that.
So what part are we talking about? How much are we talking about? And approximately where would this be?
It'd be where the bike lane ends.
Okay.
So
okay.
We're just, our project just involves the bike lanes, but they want to bring in the actual mainline pavement in between it and tie it into the same letting. There's a number of issues with that. It just brings in a lot more testing requirements, federal aid requirements. I've tried to work with the DOT to see if it was impossible. They said it's difficult, but they could make it work. I'm going to have to deal with a whole other department of the DOT because I'm just working with the bike lane department to get these plans developed. But what else it does is they said the county would have to pay these funds up front. The city couldn't do that. So I've talked with Lisa, and she has some concerns, too, that the county paying for a city project, it just doesn't work out right. We don't have anything budgeted or programmed for it, and it's very easy for the city just to let it locally. Then it's a local job, and it's not that difficult. And I had their consultant convinced of that, but then the next day the city manager requested again that we include it. So
there's nothing wrong with requesting it.
Yeah.
And we explained to them what is feasible and what isn't feasible, and from our perspective, we just give them an answer, and then they can go ahead and move forward.
I'm ready to move the bike lane issue off of our topic of conversation. I think there's still some money that needs to be raised by the citizens group.
I'm still waiting to get the numbers from that group. I've requested those and was told that they were coming, but I haven't
seen. Okay. I don't want anything that complicates this anymore. And so I would suggest that we direct Darren that, no, what we want to do is we want to do the bike lanes. We don't want anything that complicates it, so we respectfully decline Nevada's request to include any roadway portion. I don't know if that needs to be in the form of a motion or if we can just direct our engineer to handle it.
We can direct our engineer in that regard.
I think that's good enough. Yep. Quick update on McCallsburg. You said Wally stopped in asking about transfer jurisdiction.
We haven't had a public meeting, so I haven't told you guys. Wally Loney, McCallsburg called. McCallsburg would like to give us back both. What it's?
Yeah, they actually have two stretches, E18 and then S27, which is a small stretch. But just give you a quick history on that. 2004 legislature turned. Cities under a population of 500, farmer market extensions reverted back to counties, and the road use tax money came to the counties with that. Four cities that fell under that in the county. Two of them wanted the roads back with the road use tax money, so you can do an agreement to turn it back to the city. Kelly did that, but it was just a 3-year agreement and expired because they had a project they wanted to pay off and then it'd be done. So that automatically expired. The only one left is McCallsburg, and they seem to look at this every year about this time, and they haven't taken official action yet. But from my perspective, it doesn't matter. We can maintain it, but we get the road use tax. It's about $9,000 a year that we give to the city now. We would just get that money, and then we would maintain it. So
I told Mayor Loney that their council needed to take formal action. It's a 28E that can be terminated with agreement of both parties. So I told him I just wanted McCallsburg to go ahead and take action, and then it would come before us to take action. If we both terminate, then it just reverts back to us.
600th Avenue, we had an application to add that to our foreign market system with the DOT review board. They denied that application, which is a bit of a surprise. But the reasoning behind that, they looked at our system, the foreign market system as a whole, and our system, on average, is 5 to 7% larger than the statewide average. That's why it was denied. So in order to get it, they said we could apply again, but we would definitely have to take some stuff off the system to get it on.
Is Airport Road on the farm to market?
Airport is, yes.
Yeah. So to me, it would be if we decided we wanted to go ahead with that, it would be as simple as take an airport off, which is curb and gutter, and so it doesn't work for some of the some of the equipment that's going to need to go on that.
They may have an issue with taking roads off that are already paved because that's really part of the system, and they don't want you to just move it so you can pave another road. They may have an issue with that. They want us to look at roads that with low ADTs out. There's a couple areas in the corners of the county that have like 2 to 3 mile grids, and they're looking more towards like 4 mile grids, what they'd like to see in the more rural areas. So we'll get a formal letter on that soon. I'll forward that to the board on what their actual conclusion was.
Yep.
On a side note, my 3-year term on the county engineer's exec board is up this month, but I was added to the farm to market review board, so I'm on that committee now. I'll probably have to abstain from any future application from Story County, but just so you know. Lincoln Way and 590th plans. This is the DuPont ethanol plant construction. The city has plans created. I think they're looking at a January letting for those plans. That would create turn lanes on Lincoln Highway and pave a portion of 590th north of Lincoln Way. It's going to create a little bit of a conflict because Highway 30 construction is going to go at the same time next year, and they'll be down the two-lane or head-to-head traffic on one side, and then they could close Lincoln Way at the same time and take. They're working with the DOT on how they could work that out, but it's going to cause some confusion in that corridor next year. West 190th. Familiar with West 190th is where the Prairie Moon Winery is out there. It's just a seal-coated road that was done approximately 10 years ago. We have never put a speed limit on that road. That is something I'm looking at real closely. It needs one due to the design of the road. No shoulders, a lot of hills, and what kind of brought this up in my mind again is a new driveway was recently put into the winery. They have a new building as a store that's going to get a lot of traffic. It's kind of a bad situation. They had an existing drive that really wasn't used much, and they went in and they paved it without consulting with their office. The permit is needed to do something like that, but they didn't know that, so they paved it anyway. I would have worked with them to relocate that driveway, but since they paved it already, it's more difficult to do that because they did have an existing driveway. I really can't deny access to it. But the paving, I think we could have worked something out better. So I've been working with them. It's right over the top of a hill. And we can meet 45-mile-an-hour design speed on that driveway, but we can't meet the 55, which it is now. But that wouldn't be my sole reason for posting that at a 45. There's a lot of issues. We have an intersection further to the west that is in the same situation. That narrow bridge down there, and like I said, no shoulders. So I'd say in the next couple of weeks, expect a resolution coming through that would post that road.
Well, with the potential of the traffic increase because of that business and all the other things, it makes logical sense to reduce the speed limit in that area.
And Cameron School Road, the half mile to the south there, that's already posted lower too, and this road is...
I can't believe that one's 55 now. No. You don't need to be driving 55 on that little stretch.
I expect that to come soon. Again, another speed limit issue is on State Street. I'm working with the City of Ames on State Street reconstruction south of Highway 30. That has a curvy area in there. It already is posted low, but when they reconstruct a road like that, they have to meet current design standards, and they can't do that. The only way to get around that is to have lower speed limits. So they got to have those match with their design, so there just might be some adjustments. It won't necessarily be changing anything, and that one definitely requires a lower speed limit too anyway, but...
And now, is State Street along that stretch, is it in Ames, in the county, back in Ames? I mean, is that the way it goes?
Yeah, it's a mixture.
Let's just make sure that it's all consistent. I mean, whatever Ames has it posted.
We'll coordinate it with them. Yeah.
While you're talking about signs, as I was driving to St. Louis this last weekend, down near Mount Pleasant right before, some of the counties really, what I think, have some neat, right before you get to some of the intersections, you know, you've got your little small sign that identifies the name of the street. But right before that, there's a much larger sign that really clearly lets you know ahead where the street is.
Yeah.
And when someday, if we ever get some additional pots of money, to me, I think that would really be an asset to have, because particularly even in daytime, but at nighttime when you're traveling along some of these areas, you don't realize just where you are. Now, local folks in the area probably are familiar, but that to me, I said, really stood out a lot, that these signs were much larger than the normal ones, and it just indicated that the same road was just a few feet ahead, actually.
We've actually done that on Highway 30 a couple years ago with the big signs, advance warning. There was a program the DOT funded, but the county had the installation and all that. On between here names, you'll see those. They do help.
And it was just off of state highways, right?
For
that program,
so, yeah.
Which is where you're traveling down 218 right there,
218,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then 163, yeah. Okay, good. All right.
Quick discussion on Grant Avenue again. We discussed the accidents last month and some of the things we're doing with that. And one of them was that the Intrans has a research study on a couple of roads and some other roads in other counties around us, but that was one of them. We got a preliminary report just recently from them on some proposed mitigation. I'll be forwarding that in an email today. But some of the recommendations out of that committee, number one is probably the least likely to happen. They want install delineators every 300 feet on both sides of the road. That creates a lot of maintenance issues with us because it's just right off the shoulder, and it's actually created a more dangerous situation with our mowers zigzagging in a snowplow, is having to zigzag. And they understand that probably won't happen, but that's the least likely of these recommendations. But other comments were meet with the Gilbert High School officials, driver's ed instructors, and the principal to discuss the safety concerns. And there's a video out counties have made on gravel road driving that needs to be part of driver's ed, at least at Gilbert names. Consider reducing the regulatory speed limit to 45 or 50. That's something we'll be discussing more. Review apparent crash clusters along the route. Review existing intersection traffic control at 180th and 190th. Schedule routine law enforcement patrols in the morning and afternoon on school days. And that's something this group is actually out at the sheriff's office as we speak, discussing that with the sheriff. They actually have funds as part of this research to fund, to have the deputies out there at these times. So they're discussing if that's a possibility with them. And then they're going to be out at my office here when I'm done. I'm going to discuss these in more detail with them. But I'll forward these to you. But
yeah,
these
but
are all
Darren, just remind me now. Last time we visited about this, knowing that there's a real push to pave that stretch, and I think it's going to be interesting when we get into budget time. I would assume that's not one of the proposals that you've put forward in your budget, but we'll talk it through. But I thought as we talked about this, we talked about putting a four-way stop sign on Grant, and what would that be? That would be 180th.
Yes.
Yep. Grant 180th. It's a two-way stop right now, making that a four-way stop. And we talked about talking with the sheriff about making sure that we have a presence out there, especially as they get started with that new high school. I'm in favor of discussing lowering the speed limit along that route. I think safety concerns with our young drivers are very real. Paul, I thought you brought up a great point last time we talked about it. We've got a county road paved over there on George Washington Carver. We got U.S. Highway out there on 69. How many areas in the county do we have north south where we pave every single grid? I just think it's going to be hard to do. But that doesn't alleviate our responsibility of talking about the safety concerns along that stretch.
And I think it's only going to increase now with the bond issue that passed up there for the year.
Right. Yep.
At what point do we have to? I know we all got the email here a week or so ago about wanting to know a timeline.
Oh, okay.
Because how you read the email, I think it was an assumption that it's going to get paved on the part of the sender. But I mean, they're wanting to know what a timeline, and my simple response was that we haven't set a timeline. I said the first thing we need to do is make a decision whether we're going to pave it or not.
And the decision really revolves around there is no real funding mechanism to do that. Our budget, it's just we'd have to lay off 5 employees to pave that road. The way our budget's structured, the only way it could be done is through some other fund. because we have a cap on our fund, too, that we can't go over. So
right.
Have to come out of the general fund somehow or the TIF funds, which doesn't sound like a possibility.
It would simply a matter of paving the road because in that area they're going to want a bike lane.
Oh, sure.
On either side of it, too. So, okay.
Well, to me, there's three possibilities here. One is it's a gravel road. That's what it was set up to be. That's what it needed to be. Yeah, it's got a high school on it now, so let's take as many precautions as we can, including the four-way stop and reducing the speed limit and encouraging the sheriff to have patrols out there. Second one is we could just go ahead and pave it, knowing that what's going on south of 190th in and out of Ames, they aren't getting that done right now. So now you've got nicer road to the north, lesser road down where the traffic is really coming from. And I know one person pointed out that it's coming from the west on 190th and turning north. Well, if you're coming from the west on 190th, just go north on George Washington Carver, and you get there.
Or why would you come from the west at all? Go up George Washington Carver.
There you go. But anyway, the one that makes sense to me are the people that are living down in Bloomington Heights or down in North Ames. Well, that's more of a straight shot. I get it. But the time that for us to have that conversation, as I view it, is when Ames finally decides that they're going to pave all the way out to 190th, and I know we've got some responsibility in there, but there's a development agreement. Well, now all of a sudden, you could potentially look at that as economic development. I mean, there are you could view it in other ways, and I think that's the time to have the conversation. But for now, knowing that they're going to open the school, you know, next fall, we better be ready for there to be increased traffic and increased young traffic on that road.
I'll get those forwarded to you today. Last thing, I just have a couple of personnel issues I want to make you aware of. One, our maintenance superintendent had some health issues that could restrict his driving for about 6 months. So he's our only non-union employee on the maintenance side, so he's the one that gets up 3 in the morning and drives the road. So we're going to have to cover for him for about 6 months on between me and my assistant on checking roads. So the other issue is we have two retirements. Just found out about yesterday. One is effective of last Friday, and the other one is effective tomorrow. So we need to get some job posted for those two positions as soon as possible.
These motor grade operators primarily are...
They were mainly truck drivers.
Truck drivers.
And one was a 3 position, so what that's going to do internally, we would expect a motor grader to probably switch over to that. So it may create an open motor grader position when we swap through all the openings here. So
just work with Alyssa on that.
Yeah, I'll be working with her. Okay. So I have.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. So forth. And I assume we did get the notification from SERPA that we will have to take formal action January 2nd to identify the positions that we'll have. So I don't think that should be really a main problem. I think Tyler was listed as one of the technical committees or something.
Yeah, he's alternate. Yep.
Yeah, so that shouldn't create a problem as far as you know. Okay.
We'll get those added.
All right. I'll take that. Okay. Right. Okay. I have a formal.
That was the MPO one. Ames MPO that just came in, too, so you probably get them. We'll get them all.
Okay. All right. Great. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Item 11, liaison assignments and committee updates. Anything? Paul?
Fast.
Rick? Good. Just quickly, I met with Deb yesterday. Primarily, it was a brief discussion about the presentation on regionalization here that she just wanted to see if I had any additional questions and so forth. So she covered pretty much all of those things. So that's all. Other reports. Public forum number 2. Comments on items not on the agenda. Board can't take any action at this time, but may do so in the future. Certainly want to welcome our student. And I didn't recognize, are you one of the students also? Okay, great. Well, recognize the 2 students. Well, you're always welcome. And
an hour and a half of your life you'll never get back right there.
Great. So with that, announcements from the supervisors. Just quickly, I think I briefly mentioned to Darren, The last few years, as you all know, there's been ongoing discussions about trying to look at the Chicago to Council Bluff Omaha Regional Passenger Rail System study. And I was attended a meeting in Illinois a couple of years ago. There are some environmental impact statements that is going to be out there as well. For this area, the meeting is tomorrow night at Des Moines Botanical Center at the Oak Wilson Room from 4 o'clock to 5:30, and then there will be a formal presentation at 5:30 with a question and answer portion. I don't know how well this is going to be attended or what have you, but there is a website with www.iowadot.gov/Chicago to Omaha that has all of the information that will be presented at the meeting. So I'll just repeat that again for any interested citizens. It's www.iowadot.gov/Chicago to Omaha. And this is the meeting in our particular area tomorrow evening. The next item is that on the 19th, I will be meeting with the risk pool board, the mental health risk pool board that I've served. My term, my three-year term, actually expires in a couple months from now. And we are meeting to file the report that has to go to the governor and the General Assembly as to how the funds were distributed for 2012-13. Just as a note, the overall expenditures that were awarded was $7,728.911 to the counties of the approximately $10 million that had been set aside. So there's a remaining portion of about $2,657,000 that is going to be returned to the state. And one of the discussions will be is a recommendation as to from the risk pool board as to where those monies should be retained, whether they go back in the general fund or will they remain in the risk pool for future allocations, or whether some of the transition funds that has not been fully funded to meet all the county's requests could be utilized. And I did mention this at the mental health redesign meeting last week. And so I don't know if they will form a formal recommendation, but I do plan to recommend, if unless you have some issues with that, that at least they consider maybe putting those dollars towards the transition dollars. As you know, there was $20 million, only probably $1.4 million were awarded. And
that's a recommendation.
Yes. And so I'm going to at least bring that to the table and see where it goes with the committee, unless you think I probably shouldn't mention that as a possibility.
I think that's the most appropriate place for it.
Okay. Okay, so with that,
adjournment.
Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.